Good afternoon. I assume you're exhausted. First of all, you had your lunch, and then when your blood is in the stomach rather than the brain, then you had three rabbis, illustrious rabbis, talking to you. So you must be exhausted. So let me put the problem of the nature of Israel very briefly and as lucidly as I can. So the idea is, the problem is, of how to have a state as a, on the one hand, a democracy, and on the other hand, a nation state. First of all, let me emphasize that this is nothing that has to do with Israel in particular. There are several dozens states in present world, present Western world, more accurately, that are both democracies and nation states. And nobody discussed them too much. I always tell my students that I'm a polite lecturer. I don't speak when someone else speaks. Okay, so there is Finland. Think about Finland, okay? Finland is the nation state of the Finns, and it has a large Swedish minority, and it's a democracy, undoubtedly a democracy. And then think about Sweden, adjacent Sweden. It's a democracy, no doubt about that. It has a significant minority of Finns. It's the nation state of the Swedes, so there is a large minority of Finns. When you travel there, you see the street signs are in two different languages. The language of the majority and the language of the minority. Now, don't think about Canada, okay? When I'm talking about those two places, because Canada is by constitution multicultural, which is something related but different. So I saw where I live in the hotel. In the vicinity of my hotel downtown, I saw street signs in English and Chinese because it's adjacent to Chinatown. But that's another issue, another problem. Multiculturalism is another conception, which is not the Israeli or the conception of Finland or Sweden or other places. So how can a state be both a nation state, which means a state particularly related to a certain group, which constitutes just its majority of citizens, not all of its citizens, on the one hand, and be a democracy on the other hand. Be a democracy, in our intuitions at least, comes with equality, equal treatment of everybody, whatever, of whatever ethnic origin, whatever gender, color, race, views, and so on and so forth. So that's the issue of democratic nation states in general. In order to solve that puzzle, I should have said that by the end of my talk, I'll get to the nation, to the Israeli present controversy about the Chok HaLeom, the law of the nation, but the way philosophers discuss such issues is that they make a lot of introductions, a lot of clarifications, then the conclusion just follows easily. And so I'll get to the law, the nation law, eventually. But when we are already equipped with the required conceptual tools. I'd like to, because our time is short, I'd like to make three statements about democracies, three statements about nation states, and then to see why they are compatible with each other, which is my major claim, that there is no tension between them. And then we'll talk about Israel, the particular case of Israel. So what is a democracy? I mean, the ordinary Israeli education, I don't know about the Canadian sufficiently, the ordinary Israeli education about democracy is very superficial. and even misleading. People think that, okay, if you have elections every year and a half, this is our standards, but in the law it's every 4 years. If you have elections, free elections, equal elections, you have free press, you have a judiciary, independent judiciary, then that's a democracy. Wrong. I mean, people hear from in their years in the kindergarten that democracy means it's demos kratos, right? It's a Greek term. It's the rule of the people. Wrong. I mean, it was some Athenian conception, which has nothing to do with our conception of democracy. Okay, who were the rulers of Athens? Were there all the citizens of Athens? No, just the men, okay, who are free, who live within the premises of the town, and who have all kinds of additional traits. So that's hardly, it's not a democracy in our books. So the allusion to the Greek meaning of the word democracy, as if this is our conception of democracy, is also wrong. So I'd like to address it, the question, what is democracy? Okay, so first of all, three points I'll make. First point is that democracy is a solution of a certain problem. In order to understand what is democracy, we have to understand what is the problem that democracy is intended to solve. Every artifact in our life, and democracy is an artifact, is a solution of some problem. I mean, if I don't know what that means, what that is, I don't know what this is. I hope I'm causing no trouble to anybody. Okay, I don't know what this is. Okay, I'll find out in a minute. But probably there is some problem, the solution of which is this device. Okay? Now, when I understand the problem, I can start explaining the function of each part, the function of the whole device. I understand it as a solution of a certain problem. So what is the problem that solution is, the solution of which is democracy, is a democratic regime? And democracy in the very simple sense, I mean, create a list of democracy. Canada is a democracy. United States is a democracy. UK is a democracy. And France and Italy and Israel and several others, some dozens of others. Those are, intuitively speaking, democracies. So we ask ourselves, what is the problem they solve? And then there are China and Syria and Saudi Arabia. In Hebrew, they all start with Samach, with an S, who are not democracies. Okay, they are given intuitively as not democratic. So what is the difference between those states and those states? That's the philosophical question that we'd like to answer. So what I'd like to say, very briefly, is that here is the problem that democracy intends to solve, and I'll present the problem in two steps. First of all, human condition is full of regular human condition, not disastrous, not irregular. Regular human condition is life full of conflicts. A circumstance of conflict is a circumstance, those are circumstances when I have some practical plan, and this gentleman has some practical plan. This practical plan could be who is going to push the button first, but it could be much larger. Who will buy the apartment? Who will cross the intersection first? Could be any type of a conflict. Now, a conflict is where there are two practical plans that cannot be carried out together. There is a conflict between them. If one plan is carried out, it means the other one cannot be carried out. If I cross the section, you cannot cross the section. If I'm the first to push the button, then you are not the first to push the button. Okay, so most of the conflicts are, we don't even pay attention to them because we are used to encounter them solved already. Okay, in the intersection you have traffic lights, so it's red in your direction, so you stop. In his direction it's green, so he crosses the intersection, and then it is the change of the lights. Okay, so there are conflicts. The question is, what should be done under circumstances of a conflict? There is the solution of the jungle. In Aramaic, it's called the Alim Gvar. The stronger has the upper hand. If I'm stronger, everyone uses, every party to the conflict uses its force. And the one that has more force than the other does what it wants. But that's not democracy, right? I mean, if you look at democracies on the one hand and the other states on the other hand, I mean, democracy do not act this way, that, you know, there is a conflict between two citizens, so they fight. And the stronger has the upper hand. This is not the way we act. Okay, so there is something else that has to do with the identification of the problem that a democracy is interested in solving. So we are interested in arrangements that tell us what to do under conflict circumstances, but we are interested in arrangements that are fair, that are just, that involve respect for human dignity. But each of these words deserves a seminar of, you know, of 3 weeks. But just let's leave them on an intuitive level, okay? There must be fair arrangements. A fair, which means that if there is a conflict, the conflict is solved not by force, but by the nature of the conflict. But if there is no preference for one driver coming from one direction over another driver coming from another direction, so it's rotating. It's a rotating system. First I try because I came from here. Now the green light is in my direction. Then you do it. It's a just arrangement. Okay, so the problem the democracy is intended to solve is to have arrangements that guide the citizens when they encounter themselves and they find themselves in circumstances of conflict, arrangements that are just, honest, fair, respect human dignity, so on and so forth. Those are different descriptions of the same idea, but I don't want to elaborate. I don't have time to elaborate it. So this is point number one. Democracy is interested in just arrangements of common life, in particular that part of our life which involves conflicts between ourselves and others. Come to think of it, look at democracies. All the democracies that I mentioned, except for Israel, have a Bill of Rights, a constitutional Bill of Rights. Israel has a partial constitutional Bill of Rights, just two fundamental laws, and then a lot of decisions of the Supreme Court. Practically, it's the same list of human rights, that civil rights that we have in Israel and elsewhere. So those bills of rights tell us what to do under circumstances of conflict. And in a democracy, those bills of rights, I mean, institute just arrangements. Okay, freedom of speech. I have freedom of speech, you have freedom of speech, she has a freedom of speech, we have exactly the same extent of freedom of speech, and the freedom of speech stops at a certain point, inciting murder, disclosing military secrets, disclosing medical information, and that's behind the line, the red line. But until that red line, okay, we all have that liberty of expressing our views in different ways. So that's the problem that democracy is intended to solve. Now, point number two, democracy solves this problem by two principles. And those two principles involve a distinction, rest on a distinction between two kinds of conflicts. There are two different kinds of conflict. There are conflicts related to individual practices. There is an apartment to be sold. I'm interested in that apartment. I'd like to buy it. I express my interest in buying it. Assume it's an apartment within a huge house, huge building. Then I express my interest in buying it. And, okay, the owner is willing to sell it to me, but the neighbors dislike me. Now, why do they dislike me? Because I'm Jewish, because I'm not Jewish, because I'm straight, because I'm gay, because I'm black, because I'm white. I mean, every trait in the book can serve some people as reasons for disliking me. Okay, so they don't want me to buy that apartment. Okay, so there is a conflict between me and the neighbors. I would like to buy the apartment, but the neighbors don't want me to buy the apartment. Okay, a conflict. That's one type of a conflict. Then there is another type of a conflict, completely different. It has to do not with individual plans, it has to do with common plans, with plans that involve the whole population. I mean, think about an interesting example is that of the Obamacare. Okay, the ideas that United States President Obama had concerning access to medical treatment of citizens. Okay, now there is a conflict. There is still a conflict, right? There is, I mean, in Israel it was solved long ago. In the United Kingdom it was solved long ago. In the United States it's still ongoing conflict, but there is a law. Okay, so there is one view that says your medical problem is your individual problem. We, the public, are not interested in it. It's your own. Solve it on your own. Then there is another view, which Israel instituted, which United Kingdom instituted, which President Obama pushed. Namely, it is our business. It is the business of the general public to support the poor who cannot afford the insurance required for certain types of medical treatment, and we, the public, are going to support the poor in certain ways. Okay, so this is a conflict between two different views, and it has to do with all the individuals in the state. It's not just my conflict with that neighbor of the apartment I'd like to buy. It's all of us. All of us are involved. It's going to become the law of the state, or not going to become the law of the state. An Israeli example is the future of the territories that are under Israeli effective control since 1967. Okay, what should be done with that? There are different views. There is a view that says, okay, we should uproot all the settlements and return to the 67 borders and create a Palestinian state there. And that is going to be the solution of the problem. That's one view. Another view is that we should remain between the sea and the Jordan River forever. Another view. Those two are incompatible with each other. Then there is a third view, say, okay, there are clusters of settlements. They should remain. All the other settlements should be uprooted and become part of the territory should become part of the Palestinian state, if there is one. Okay, and there are many others. And so there is a conflict. I mean, what is going to be the position of Israel? It's not my personal position. Everyone has his own position or her own position. What would be the stance of Israel with respect to those territories? So this is a conflict on another level. So there are two different types of conflict. And democracies have two different types of principles, because they're interested in solving conflict of both types. But we need a different principle for every type of a conflict. Point number two. Point number three in this brief portrayal of democracy. We have two principles, but principles of basic human rights is intended to solve conflicts on an individual level. Then we have the principle of the rule of majority, which is intended to solve conflicts on the general level, the level of the whole nation. And those are two different principles. They don't touch each other. I mean, so you cannot say that a democracy means a rule of majority. No, there is another principle as well. You cannot say democracy is human rights. No, there is another principle as well, namely rule of majority. So there are two principles, and each of them applies in a certain area. So in the area of individual conflicts, the rule that the principle that applies is that of basic human rights. I have the freedom of speech, of movement, of an organization, and many others. Whether it's in the Constitution or in amendments and things like this, doesn't matter at all. But I enjoy a system of arrangements that guarantees my liberties. Not only does it state that I have liberties, it defends my my defense, my liberties. If I'm interested in demonstrating, in standing on the street, holding a certain statement concerning recent affairs, the police should protect me against those who would like to remove me from the street. So we have liberties. And which means that if I want to buy the apartment, the neighbors don't want me to buy the apartment, the owner of the apartment is willing to sell it to me, then I'll do whatever I like. I can take them into account, the neighbors, I can forget about them. I have a protected liberty to buy it, because conflicts on the level of individuals are solved on the grounds of the principle of basic human rights. I have the right to buy that kind of property. The owner is willing to sell it to me. There is no law broken by our doing it. So the neighbors should just shut up. Or I can take them into account. I can say, well, it's inconvenient, it's unpleasant. Perhaps I should look for another apartment. But I can just, I may ignore them by the arrangements of the state if I'm not interested in their complaints. Okay, now, when there is a clash of views on the level of the state, then we have the rule of majority. Now, the rule of majority, actually, it's a misleading name. But the rule of majority is actually a cluster, a family of procedures for reaching a general conclusion. So if you take a democratic system, so the public, which means many people in the public, elect the parliament. The parliament elects, okay, in the United States it's different, but say in other places, the parliament elects a government, there is a prime minister and ministers, and they make proposals for policies, and the government and the parties in the parliament make proposals for laws. And they vote. Eventually they vote. And the majority has the upper hand. Why does the majority have the upper hand? Because there's no choice. We ought to opt for one policy. The other policy is incompatible with this policy, so we have to opt for one of them. So the majority has it's only fair that a majority who is supported by more people, more members of parliament, but more people in the population, has the upper hand. If possible, we should look for a consensus. We should look for something that everyone agrees upon. But not always can we reach such a general agreement. If you have to elect one president, then okay. So we cannot, you know, create a president who is half Republican, half Democrat, right? In the United States case. Okay, it's either this candidate or that candidate. So there is no choice but that the majority will have the upper hand. So this is democracy in a nutshell. It's a solution of the problem. The problem is of conflicts. We have two kinds of conflict. We have a principle for solving each kind of conflict. That's how democracy works. If you look at the list of states that I mentioned, Canada, US, UK, Israel on the one end, China, Saudi Arabia, and Syria on the other end, you see that this is the differences. Those are the differences between them. Okay, now a nation state. 3 points about nation state. Again, it's a topic for seminars that will take 3 months. But just 3 points. First of all, if you look at a state that has a certain relationship with a certain national, with a certain people, certain group, the Finns, the Swedes, the Jews in Israel, then what they enjoy is independence. Okay? The Jews in Israel are independent. The Finns in Finland are independent. The Swedes in Sweden are independent. What does it mean to be independent? It means, first of all, that they are not under the government of anybody else. Okay, we in Israel, where even I myself, I was under the, when I was born, I was a I was born under British mandate. I was a native of some colony of the Brits. So therefore my birth certificate is in English. And since the English have the idea that names that appear in the Bible should be spelled the way it is spelled in the King James Authorized Version, then Asa, my name is Asa, and it's spelled with one S. People always call me Asa, and they think it's a woman. And so, but it's Asa, because in King James Authorized Version, 1631, Asa, King Asa in the Bible, I mean, it's written with one S. So I was a subject of the king of the United Kingdom. Not anymore. Not anymore. We are not subjects of any king. We are not subjects of any foreign power. We are independent. I mean, it's a novelty in Jewish life, right? Even in democracies, I mean, people are under the government of the majority that is of a different nature. We are not. We in Israel are not. Oh, the Finns in Finland are not. They're independent. There is no larger group that serves as a majority where they are the minority. So first of all, it's independence. Now, independence is less important than it seems. I mean, we have the proclamation of independence, we have the day of independence, we think a lot about independence because we were dependent. So we stress independence. However, there is the other side of the coin of independence, which we still have to master the importance of, namely responsibility. Okay, independence means that the British governor is not going to tell me what to do. Who is going to tell you what to do? You are going to tell us we are going to tell us what we do, what we ought to do. In my previous talk, I spoke about the idea in military affairs that the Dina de Malchuta Dina, the king will tell us what we ought to do. Now we are the king. We are responsible, which means we ought to do whatever is required with respect to the fate of these people. The Finns are responsible to the fate of the Finnish people. The Jews in Israel are responsible to the fate of the Jews in Israel. The Swedish people in Sweden are responsible to the fate of the Swedes in Sweden. So being responsible is a novelty in Jewish life. Being responsible means being responsible to all common dimensions of the public life, not just to yourself, your family, your community, but to the state, to the economy of the state, to the military force of the state, to the higher education of the state, to the lower education of the state, to everything, you name it, we are responsible. Okay? We are responsible, not by this I don't mean that the government ought to do it. It could be done by other arrangements. But the government should see to it that this is being taken care of. Which means that we ought to act as the responsible party. Responsible to the fate of the Jews, the Jewish people in Israel, which constitute the majority of the citizens of Israel. Ideally, I apologize for having to say it, ideally, the majority of the Jewish people are in Israel. Like, ideally, the majority of the Greeks are in Greece, and the majority of the Swedish are in Sweden, and the majority of the Finns are in Finland, which is actually the case. But the case of Israel is still problematic. Okay, 66 years old is a baby state, right? So we still have hopes for reaching a situation where the majority of the Jews, not all the Jews, but the majority of the Jews would be in Israel. I mean, that's the ideal of a nation state. The majority of the people belonging to this, the majority of the people belonging to that group are in the nation state of the group. Now, the state, like Finland or Sweden or Israel, includes a significant minority of non-members of that nation. Swedish people in Finland, Finns in Sweden, non-Jews in Israel. Since we are a democracy, we are responsible to their fate as well, but in a different way. We are responsible to the fate of the Arabs in Israel. About 20% of the population is Arabs. We are responsible. I mean, being responsible is being responsible to every dimension of the general life, like education, like economy, like health, like transportation, like security. Israel is responsible to all those dimensions of life, whether it's Jews or non-Jews, to which it's going to apply. So we are responsible not only to the fate of the Jews in Israel, but also to the fate of non-Jews in Israel. Thirdly, the third point concerning a nation state is that we take ourselves in Israel. In the case of Israel, it's more dramatic than in any other case, except perhaps for Greece. Greece, when Cyprus was a problem. Okay, there was a war between different groups of Cypriots, those affiliated with Greece and those affiliated with Turkey. So Greece was very much interested in what's going on in Greece, and Turkey too. So because those are Turks, so Turkey is interested. Those are Greeks, so Greece is interested. But that's rare. But for the Jews, it's not rare. Because anti-Semitism is all over the place. It's not... I don't want to evaluate the extent to which there are anti-Semitic phenomena. Undoubtedly there are. I don't know whether we do exaggerate it or underestimate it. It's not my profession. But there is a possibility of anti-Semitism, which means that there is a possibility that Jews be persecuted by a majority, by a party, by someone. So being a nation state means that this is automatically our problem. We are the nation state of the Jews, so if Jews are being persecuted somewhere, it's our problem. It's our problem doesn't mean that we are going to solve it on our own. If there are some kind of, say, anti-Semitic phenomena in France or in Canada or in the United States, those are friendly states, they have governments. Those governments are always against racism and against anti-Semitism and against those phenomena, so we address those governments. They have to do whatever is required in order to solve the problems of anti-Semitism. Now, the problems of anti-Semitism are problems of infringing on the rights of the Jews or doing something that threatens the Jews or frightens the Jews. I mean, the very fact that some guy, sells a Spanish translation of the protocols of the elders of Zion, I'm not interested in that. Okay, that's anti-Semitism, all right, but I'm not interested in it. I'm interested in anti-Semitism when it reaches some practical, more practical, more dangerous level. And threats to the well-being of Jews, needless to say, murder that we saw in France and things like this is something that is our problem. When it is a friendly state, then we are in touch with that, with the authorities of this state. When it's not a friendly state, then we have our means of treating it, which should be consigned to silence. But it's our problem. We can never say, well, you're Jewish, you should have immigrated to Israel. You stayed where you are, you're persecuted, your problem. No. I mean, you're Jewish, you stayed where you are. Well, we would have preferred you coming to Israel. You stayed where you are, stay where you are. You're persecuted, it's our problem, not only your problem. So, which means we are going to do whatever is required by addressing the authorities or doing something else in other states in order to alleviate the dangers. Okay, so this in very briefly, three points about nation states. Now I'd like to add to say a few words about the relationships between a democracy and a nation state. A democracy has to treat equally and respect the human rights of every citizen. It can do it while being responsible, because of the majority being Jewish, to the fate of the Jews in Israel, as long as being responsible to the fate of the Jews is on a par with being responsible to the fate of the non-Jews, which is what democracy requires. So there are just two main points where there seems to be some tension between the idea of democracy and the idea of a nation state. One is the symbolic level. Okay, the flag of Israel is the shield of David. The emblem of Israel is the menorah. We sing Hatikva, which is the hope of the Jewish nation. Okay, those are Jewish symbols. There is one symbol of Israel which is not particularly Jewish, although as it happens, it's always Jewish, but not required to be Jewish. And that is the president. I mean, the role of a president in Israel is not like in the United States, not even like the queen in England. It's weaker than the queen. So it's a symbol. It's a symbol of the merits of Israel. The president is a symbolic figure, but it's a person, so it's a colorful symbol. And according to the Israeli laws, I mean, every citizen can be president. As it happens, the president is Jewish, because the majority is Jewish. And why should they elect someone who is non-Jewish to represent the state of the Jews? But it's a symbol. Okay, now I'm not going to apologize for the symbols of Israel being Jewish. Okay, although 20% are not Jewish. Because that was the essence of the establishment of the state of Israel. When in 1947... the United Nations General Assembly made a decision concerning the establishment of a Jewish state, a Palestinian state, and a third entity related to Jerusalem and Bethlehem, then it was a Jewish state. So that was a state of the Jews. So everyone there who voted for the two-thirds majority voted for that decision. So they voted for a Jewish state, a state which is the homeland of the Jews, which is the nation state of the Jews. So the symbols of the nation state of the Jews are going to be Jewish. To the same extent that the flags of other states, although they include many Jews and many Muslims, still include crosses, all kinds of crosses. Okay, that's their identity. Greece has the Orthodox Church as its official church, and it has a cross on its flag. There could be Jews and Muslims in Greece as citizens with equal rights. They should not complain about the cross on the flag of Greece. That's part of the identity of Greece. Okay. Another issue is that of the law of return. The law of returns opened the doors almost automatically to Jews if they want to immigrate to Israel, while the doors are never automatically opened for anyone else. Okay, automatically, it's open for nobody. The doors for Jews are opened automatically if they come as Jews. And in order to become citizens of Israel. I mean, similar laws exist in other nation states. If a person would like to join the project of the independence and responsibility of the citizens of Finland to the fate of the nation of the Finns, then they can immigrate easily into Finland. So Jews can immigrate easily into Israel because the essence of Israel is the project of the Jews, who are interested in taking part in that project of independence and responsibility of the Jews. And the best way of taking part in the project of independence and responsibility to the fate of the Jews is being a citizen of the state of the Jews. So the doors are open. The doors are open in a nation state to members of that nation to join the national project. It doesn't mean that the doors are closed as much as any other person is under consideration. Now, a few words about the new proposed law. Don't trust a word you hear about it. Don't trust a word. Not just because journalists are untrustworthy. They cannot be trusted. Don't trust because everything that people say, first of all, everything that people say about it, even before elections were declared, is a reflection of a view. It's not a description, a serious, professional, responsible description of the situation. Secondly, because of the political struggles within Israel, the laws that are on the table of the parliament concerning the nation, the nation law, are extreme manifestations of a certain idea. And you don't have to think that what Israel is going to adopt are those extreme expressions. Those extreme expressions are incompatible with democracy. But what Prime Minister Netanyahu kept saying, and perhaps if he has the political power to do it, he will implement it eventually, is to have a nation law that is compatible with democracy. And the nation law that is compatible with democracy, there's nothing wrong about that. Because those are the major ingredients, the major characteristics of the state of Israel. It's a nation state, so it can say in its constitution that this is the nation state of the Jews. And we don't have to apologize for saying it. I mean, Finland says it, and Greece says it, and we can say it about the Jews. So this is the nation state of the Jews. On the other hand, another ingredient, major ingredient, is the democracy. So we ought to commit ourselves to the democratic arrangements of human rights and independent judiciary and things like this. So I have 2 minutes, right? Okay. So we may say in our constitution, and I remind you, I mean, we are just 66 years old, which is a baby state. We don't have a fully fledged constitution so far. Okay? So eventually our constitution should say that we are the nation state of the Jews and say that we are a democracy and say those two things in a way that they are compatible with each other. And they are compatible with each other. If you fully understand what is democracy and you fully understand what is a nation state, then you see that they are compatible with each other. Now, there is a problem. I'll conclude by pointing out a problem. I mean, the Hebrew expression, Medina Yehudit veDemokratit, a state which is Jewish and democratic, is within our constitutional texts. Now, many people misunderstand the expression Medina Yehudit. They don't even know the history of this expression. You wouldn't dream about the history of it if I ask you, why does the Constitution use the terms Medina Yehudit? Who insisted in the early 90s that the state will be described as Yehudit, but democratic? It was the members of the parliament, the Knesset, who are Arabic. The Arabs insisted of it being called Medina Yehudit, because Medinato shel ha'am ha'yehudi, the state, the nation state of the Jews, was considered by them to be more exclusive, more dangerous. I mean, it was a conceptual mistake. It was an utterly wrong situation. But in order to reach a broad endorsement, an agreement, this expression was adopted. But from the moment this expression was adopted, and numerous interpretations of this expression were put forward, including, for example, I mean, the most extreme ones, Yehudit means Jewish according to Halacha. Mishpat HaIvri, what the rabbi say, and things like this should have the upper hand. One of the versions of the present proposals has it that whenever there is a conflict between, whenever there is a conflict between the Jewish nature and the democratic nature, the Jewish nature should have the upper hand, the Mishpat HaIvri should have the upper hand. All those are misconceptions. and they are not related to the real essence of the meaning of those fundamental laws of those constitutional texts. Israel is the nation state of the Jews. It is a democracy. Those two ingredients are compatible with each other. If someone thinks that they are incompatible with each other, let him learn what democracy is, or let him learn what a nation state is. The moment you well understand what is a nation state and what is a democracy, then they are compatible with each other. Eventually, it will have the laws that state both those that state very clearly and constitutionally those two in the existence and the defense of those two ingredients and Baal HaTzion Goel. Thank you.